He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Tuesday, Taco Tuesday, live edition of the Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. This is professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide management firm, fee-based only, virtual. And I've got Barry Keit, our resident in-house chartered financial analyst and certified financial planner here with us. The Fed is meeting today. Isn't that nice? Okay. They're going to determine the rate you'll have to pay to borrow money, and we're all expecting an announcement yesterday of 75 basis points higher than where rates are today. The market is ultra nervous, high anxiety. There's no better way to put it. I am very, very cautious right now. I've been warning for quite some time about rising interest rates and the impact that would have on the market. We continue to hold a high degree of cash and several inverse ETFs at the current time to protect our folks. The Dow is down 361. That's 1.2%. 30,658. I'd have to say the ultimate support level on the Dow would be 30,000. As of yesterday's close, it was 31,000, but so much for that support level. Phew, it went through that like a hot knife through butter. S&P down 44 today, 38.55. NASDAQ down 85. We've got the crude oil markets down $1.33. We've got the 10-year at 3.58 and Bitcoin at 18,930. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show, Best Inverse Funds Now show. We're tilting definitely towards the inverse fund side of the market here today, as it is struggling mightily today with the Fed in session later today. The announcement comes tomorrow. And Barry, I would say that the biggest threat right now to the market is this 10-year yield 3.58. It's up 9 basis points today. What say you?
Yeah, and it's also accompanied by, you know, a 2-year that's pushing 4, which essentially is the highest since 2007. And I was doing some math. We're up 3.2% on the 2-year in 2022, which is the most since 1994. So I mean, you're talking about a 3.2% in a rate that's relatively very short term. So that's it's just certainly been, as we've alluded to a lot, is it's certainly an interest rate story.
It's definitely an interest rate story this year. I mean, as we began 2022, we said that one of the big themes for 2022 would be rising interest rates. That's a freight train coming around the track. Whether it's being driven by an electric engine or a diesel engine or electrofuels, we're going to talk about electrofuels today. That freight train is being driven by engineer Jerome Powell, who may have missed a few opportunities a while back to start hiking interest rates more slowly. Now he's got a really they're throwing the wood on the fire of that locomotive in raising interest rates to try to get inflation under control, and it remains to be seen whether or not they can get inflation under control with interest rate, an attack on interest rates only. In other words,
and it's really global, global inflation.
It's global,
right? I mean, you've got talking about nervousness in the markets. I saw where there's no shortage of a dozen central banks, meeting on Wednesday and Thursday. So wow. You're going to get 12 various decisions around the globe.
Yeah, like a jury of 12 voting on interest rates, whether or on inflation, whether the globe is guilty of inflation. I think you're going to see, I'll say 11 out of 12 hike rates, maybe 12 out of 12. Maybe you can report back to Mark, and can you track those 12 central bank meetings and the results thereof?
Yeah, and it's Wednesday and Thursday, so we'll have the final score on it should be at some point on Thursday, because my guess is time change wise the other ones will have reported by the time that we're doing the show on Thursday morning.
I would say our best performing asset overall is TBT, which is inverse the bond market and inverse interest rates two times. Okay. I personally own a little TMV. TMV is inverse interest rates three times, and both of those ETFs are having one heck of a year. They're the biggest winners in our portfolio so far here. We own them in our bond portfolio. But off and on, I think we have owned it in the emerging growth portfolio too, off and on. But overall, that bet against interest rates has been the best bet in the market, the most profitable bet in the market so far this year. You know, the market had a pretty good day yesterday. I thought, well, you know, maybe it's getting used to all of this business at the Fed. The market was up, the Dow was up about 200 points yesterday. The NASDAQ was up 87. The S&P was up 27. But those interest rates continued to tick up in an ominous fashion. And today, you know, we never could, the futures were way down. You've got choppy trading. You're waiting for the Fed announcement. I guess you have to at least think about the possibility, what would happen if he came in with a 100 basis point hike, which is not out of the question. I mean, I can definitely see that possibility. If it's this bad, the inflation, but you know, the consensus, like 93% chance of a 75 basis point hike tomorrow. The 2-year yield, like you said, is hitting a 15 year high. So that goes back to 2007. And let's go back to 2007 and think where we were in 2007. We were on the cusp of the 2008-2009 financial crisis, which took 53% out of the S&P 500. And right now, you know, we've had almost 20% from the highs, not quite, taken out of the S&P 500. Also back in 2007, not only did you have the ominous interest rates going up on the 2-year. Okay, the 2-year is almost 4%. I mean, that tells you how much investors are demanding in an inflationary environment. I mean, if inflation's running at 8.3 and you're getting 4 on the 2-year, that's still a losing bet, with the real rates. But back in 2007, you also started to see the earnings estimates going forward start to wane considerably. And that was my biggest clue that something was going on big in the markets. And, you know, outside of that, we were watching people waiting all night in line to get a single family home when they were released. And then they were turning around and selling those homes before they were even built and making a profit. And you had just about anybody being able to get a loan at that point in time. And of course, it didn't end well. This
and
time
folks, you get three loans.
Yeah, get three. Why not?
Back then, more than one. Right?
Yeah. Well, they were handing out money. Countrywide Financial, which is no longer with us, rest in peace, or not rest in peace. Lehman Brothers, which is no longer with us, Bear Stearns, which is no longer with us. Merrill Lynch would not be around were it not for the shotgun wedding with Bank of America and several other combinations like that to keep some of these more casualties out there, which would have been devastating to the financial markets. We survived. We made it through it. The markets, at the end of the day, and the U.S. pretty resilient, We face another challenge this time, a challenge we faced before back in 79 through 82 when we had the wicked inflation. I was around. I was not managing money at that time, but I definitely was feeling on the other side of that equation, feeling the impact of that wicked inflation. It completely impacted and determined who the next president would be. Impacted the presidential elections greatly, and we've got a similar problem this time around. What will the Fed do tomorrow? In the meantime, the Dow down 413 points right now. Our inverse funds looking pretty good today. We'll talk about some of those when we come back. Here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. As you know, we've talked many times about not being passive investors. You know, that was the direction that the industry went in, 15 years ago, towards that passive asset allocation model, which is basically using ETFs from either the stock side of the market or the bond side of the market and mixing them. Yesterday we were talking about a 60-40 allocation, which is very common, being down. How much was it down? 20% so far this year?
Yeah, 20% year to date.
That's 60% stock, 40% bonds. Okay, well, we believe in being active and being non, you know, I don't want to be constrained by any kind of a, you know, charter or whatever. I want to be able to go where I need to go when the situation changes. This is not 2020. 2020 was a great year in the market. This is 2022, and things are happening all over the place. Well, we started off, I don't know, several weeks ago, it was probably after Jerome Powell's Jackson Hole speech, somewhere in that time period. I started off with just some, because we had a pretty good run there in the market. It looked like maybe the market, remember the talk of the pivot? Powell's going to back off these draconian rate hikes. Well, when he gave that Jackson Hole speech, it became very apparent that that wasn't going to happen. And we started to, build a wall up around our portfolios. One way you build a wall, obviously, is with cash. You can't lose money in cash other than to inflation. We do have a 40% chunk of cash sitting on the sidelines. I do not have to remain fully invested. We began with SH and PSQ. Those are two inverse ETFs that have one-to-one inverse correlations with the averages that they are built for. In other words, SH has a one-to-one inverse correlation against the S&P 500. And SH is up 1.3% today. Pretty big volume. It's already traded 7.9 million shares. It's a ProShares product. It has 3.7 billion in it, AUM. And really there's two different fund families, ETF fund families that make these inverse ETFs available. Direction would be one, and ProShares is the other one. I became aware of ProShares and got an education on how those inverse funds work probably 15 years ago, something like that, and I have used them off and on. And, of course, this is a good time to have them, to reach down into the tackle box and to pull them out. PSQ is inverse the NASDAQ, and it's got a one-to-one correlation. It has a relative strength of 86 right now, which is very unusual. Usually these inverse funds are at the bottom. As you know, we've been in a bull market since 2009. But we've had, you know, a lot of big pullbacks, scares along the way since 2009. This is probably, I would say, maybe the worst one we've had. Well, the COVID. COVID was a pretty big scare. And then this one here, you know, this scare of inflation and going into a global recession and not having enough energy and running out of food. You know, just things like that, minor things. So anyways, PSQ is, the NASDAQ is taking it much harder than the Dow because there's higher PE stocks in the NASDAQ. We talked yesterday about the FANG stocks and how they just continue to get hammered. Meta. So glad I didn't Meta. You got Facebook, the former Facebook. You've got Google getting hammered. You've got Amazon not doing well. Netflix getting hammered. The mega cap tech stocks, Microsoft, nothing safe right now. AMD, nothing. They're getting hit harder than the rest. So PSQ is 1-to-1 inverse the NASDAQ. And then I would also say, let's see, the third one. Oh, EPV. EPV is inverse Europe. Now, EPV, there's only one inverse Europe ETF that I know of, and it happens to be 2-to-1. So, you know, Europe is down 1.9% today. Europe has all kinds of problems. EPV is up 3.9% today. Okay, so that was the first round of inverse ETFs. And, of course, we've owned TBT most of the year. Look at that thing today, Barry. Up another 3.13%. We own that against our individual bond fund.
Yeah, and the benefit there is and the reason why we use it is to it hedges our duration risk in our individual bond portfolio.
And that thing has just sizzled this year. Let me find that how much it's up. Since the beginning of the year, I can find that in the app.
I've
year
got
to
it.
Date,
yeah,
74.
Year to seven. Date, yeah. Wow.
It's up 74% since the beginning of the year. Double inverse interest rates. Okay. And then TMV, which I own a little bit of in my own, it's up. Oh, I don't think that's right. I'd have to check that. But it's done really well. It's done even more. It's up more. It's more than doubled since the beginning of the year. Okay, then when the hotter than expected inflation rate came in and the Dow went down 1,200, 1,300, I had already purchased my second round of inverse ETFs because I watched the charts every day. And I said, look at that DXD is going to break out. It's just a matter of time. DXD is 2 times the Dow inverse. Okay, so you got the Dow down 400 today. That means DXD is up 800. Okay, and if you're looking at it from a percentage basis, while the Dow is down 1.2%, DXD is up 2.4%. And, you know, like I say, I could see that chart gurgling and bubbling and headed in the right direction. It's got a relative strength of 84, while the Dow itself has a relative strength of 62. So, I mean, it's much tipped in the direction of the inverse funds, all these major indexes right now. And then the second one, I went into QID. QID is inverse the NASDAQ 2X. 2X. QID, since the beginning of... Now, we haven't owned it since the beginning of the year, but I do want to give you a flavor for how it works. It's up 51% this year, which makes sense because the NASDAQ's down about 25%. These are not long-term investments unless you really think things are going to go to heck. But during times like this, they sure make the ride a lot smoother. This is Bill Gunderson. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. Nothing's really changed since the start of the show. Dow down 400, NASDAQ down 100, Fed meeting today and tomorrow. The announcement comes tomorrow, and if you think back what's happened since the last meeting, well, you had a much hotter than expected inflation print. That's not going to help matters. And you really haven't seen any kind of good news coming out other than oil prices dropping and gasoline prices dropping. But that's an artificial drop. I see today, Barry, that President Biden has extended the release of the oil from the strategic oil reserves until November. What happens in November again?
Yeah, not too surprising on the timing wise.
No, because, you know, I mean, if you think about it, that is a big factor on a president's favorability ratings. Now, Biden's favorability ratings have gone up to 45%. And I would say that's in direct correlation with oil coming down or gasoline. I mean, everybody drives by those gas station signs every single day. We all know exactly almost where unleaded gas is on a daily basis. That was probably the worst advertising, you know, against his campaign that there could be. And they made that, I'm sure, their number one concern was to get oil and gasoline prices. And really the only place they had to turn, they tried to turn to Venezuela. They tried to turn to Iran. They tried to turn a few other places. Of course, you're not going to turn to Russia right now. He went to Saudi Arabia trying to get them to up the output, and none of those worked. And really the only thing left to do was to release oil from the strategic oil reserves, which the prior president, President Trump, had built up and filled up, you know, when oil was really, really, really cheap. So it has worked. I mean, it's brought oil prices down into the 85, 84 area. It's brought gasoline, at least in our neck of the woods, down to about $3.40 a gallon, which is a little bit more palatable than over $5 at one point in time. So, you know, what happens when the strategic oil reserve is drained and you can't hit that? I don't know. You'd have to look, Barry, at what percent is done, gone from the oil, how much is left. But that's an artificial, really an artificial drop. The only other thing that would keep oil prices down once they're done hitting the reserves would be a major recession. And a big giant slowdown in the economy. Okay, we're going to talk about renewable fuels. I just want to throw out a couple other inverse ETFs, though, however. I also own a little bit of BITI. That's inverse Bitcoin. It's up 3.4% today. That's the only inverse Bitcoin. I wish it was around when Bitcoin was 66,000. Okay, BITI was not around then. It came around in June of this year, and Bitcoin had a pretty good run, and now it's starting to fall apart again. Another one, I think the emerging markets, you know, the international markets, bigger trouble than the U.S. EUM is the one-time inverse emerging market. EDZ is three times the inverse of the emerging markets, which big chunk of China. And then you get into the Vietnams of the world and a lot of these really small, emerging, a lot of the Latin American economies. And then FXP is two times inverse the Chinese market, which isn't doing all that well, really. China has its own set of problems with the lockdowns that it's been imposing upon its people. Okay, now, on the long side of the market, I would say the number one sector in the market, and about the only sector in the market that is actually working this year is the renewables, the renewable energy stocks. And now we're starting to really get into some, you know, concept type, frontier type of renewable energy looking to replace the fossil fuels. Here's some that are in the news. I've never seen so many renewable energy stocks in the news as I have seen here the last several months, or let's just say since the beginning of the year. Number one, Amazon makes a sustainability push by bringing electrofuels to the trucking fleet. Okay, I looked into electrofuels. I was not very up on that one. But there's a startup company in California, Southern California, actually in the Silicon Valley. It is not public yet, okay? But it's getting a lot of attention. It's getting a lot of grants, etc. The name of the company is Infinium. Infinium. Electrofuels, also known as e-fuels or synthetic fuels, are a type of drop-in replacement fuel. In other words, you know, Amazon's diesel-powered trucks can start using these without any kind of conversion of the engines or whatnot. But I think the big constraint is getting them produced at the quantity and numbers that you need. They're manufactured using captured carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide together with hydrogen obtained from sustainable electricity sources such as wind, solar, and nuclear power. The process uses carbon dioxide in manufacturing and releases around the same amount of carbon dioxide in the air when the fuel is burned. In other words, it's carbon neutral for an overall low carbon, actually a low carbon footprint. Electrofuels are thus an option for reducing greenhouse gas emissions from transport, particularly for long distance freight, marine, and air transport. Now here's the interesting one, Barry. You and I have said many times that these big ships coming in and out of the port, whether they're Carnival cruise ships or the biggest container ships in the world coming from China, A.P. Moller Maersk. Okay, I see that name on a lot of the ships, a lot of the freight ships. They're investing in a startup that develops electric fuels, electrofuels, as a part of a strategy to own technologies that can help it become carbon neutral. The Danish company, which is both the world's largest shipping line and among the planet's top oil consumer. Think about that. Top oil consumer, these big freighters, global shipping. By the way, those global shipping stocks, did you see them yesterday? Oh, my gosh. Oh,
going well.
They're
yeah.
going crazy. Okay, so Maersk is investing through its corporate venture division, Maersk Growth, and will get a seat on the board of the Silicon Valley-based startup, Prometheus Fuels. Okay, there is not a publicly traded play right now on the electrofuels. There are several hydrogen fuel, plug power would be the number one. But if scaled successfully, Prometheus Fuels technology will address a key constraint for carbon-based electric fuels, mainly the cost competitiveness of direct air capture. So in other words, they have to get the price down of these electrofuels. But that's where Amazon is going. They're going to convert a big chunk of their fleet in California to use these electrofuels. So there's something we'll be watching as investors for some publicly. I mean, it's just a matter of time, Barry, before an electrofuel stock goes public, right?
Well, yeah, and we need new battery technologies. I mean, you look at the prices of lithium at the moment. You know, I think it's $71,500 for a ton of lithium at the moment, which is basically
now, these aren't electric.
These aren't electric.
They're a liquid fuel, right? But you're right.
Well,
lithium
and that's why you need to go. Yeah, that's why you're going to need to go to something else because
yes.
I mean, lithium's gone up 3 times in the last 12 months. You've got, you know, in terms of your battery technologies, you just don't have you don't have enough time to get all the lithium out of the ground to make the electric cars that you're looking to make. I mean, take a look at Ford today. They're getting hammered because of the fact that they don't have enough parts to create the vehicles that they want to create.
You're right. Lithium prices rise on strong demand and new supply challenges. Now, my son-in-law sent me a picture yesterday. He's traveling to California for a quick trip, and there was a car transport carrying 6 Rivian trucks on the road coming from the plant in Normal, Illinois. Lithium. Now, the lithium stocks are on fire. We'll be right back.
You got to go where you want to go.
And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. This is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, nationwide fee-based money management firm. We are active, not passive, and we are virtual. We don't have offices all across the country. We try to make it very efficient and easy. Our radio show is heard all across the country, and the newsletter goes out all across the world. We have a lot of listeners, too. I've had listeners from Beirut, Lebanon, from Tel Aviv, from Denmark, from Germany, from France. I mean, all over. A lot of listeners in Canada, a lot of listeners in the United Kingdom. You can go to GundersonCapital.com to listen to the show at your leisure or any of the podcast sites. And you can get 2 free weeks of the newsletter that I put out every week. It only goes to clients and subscribers, the do-it-yourselfers that follow me, GundersonCapital.com to get the newsletter. And if you say, you know what, I'm pretty sick of the people that are managing my money where I'm at now, or sick of trying to do it myself. I don't have the time to be in it all day long underneath the water with the snorkel on and a spear gun and whatever else it takes. A spear gun with an inverse ETF tip on it, Barry, sometimes we got to use. You never know. You can call us. Call us at 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. The passive movement, I didn't think it was going to end well, and it hasn't. It is not ending well. There's a big movement out of passive, the asset allocation model, into active management. Okay, all right. The best stocks in the market today that I can find, there's not very many, the shipping stocks. Okay, look, for instance, at Euro Dry. EDRY. It's up 9.2% today. It's not one of the best ones, though. It's a Greek container ship company, and it's more in the dry cargo. I prefer more of the shipping stocks like Frontline, FRO, which had a tremendous day yesterday. What do they carry with their 70 tankers? Oil and oil products. Now, there's a big deadline coming up. December the 2nd is the deadline that Europe said they would no longer buy Russian oil after that date. Now, with winter hitting and natural gas in such short supply in Europe, it remains to be seen whether or not Europe will go ahead with that threat and cut off all purchases of Russian gas. If they do that, that's going to take a lot of, or not Russian gas, Russian oil. Okay, if they do that, that's going to put big upwards pressure on oil because it takes a lot of supply off of the market. Europe's going to have to get oil from somewhere else, in other words, other than Russia. And that's going to be a big boon, continue to be a big boon to these companies. Europe does not have enough oil to support themselves. They have to They have to ship in a lot. And a Frontline is on the front line of that effort. along with several other shipping companies. I think the other one I saw yesterday was BDRY. Let me see if that's it. BDRY. Yeah, no, Breakwave. There was a one. Oh, Eurodry, EURN. That was the other one. EURN just exploded. Yep, that's the one. Euronav. And they're also, it's not Eurodry, it's Euronav. They're out of the Belgium. They're a provider of maritime shipping, offshore services, mainly in the transportation storage of crude oil. And that's why you're seeing this big rush and buying these crude oil transport companies' stocks, because of this, you know, this deadline that's coming up. I haven't heard any recent news on whether Europe's going to follow through, but I got a hunch. I mean, it would be not look good politically to continue to buy Russian oil with the continued attacks and war in Ukraine. I have a hunch they're going to follow through with it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to buy the oil, you might as well buy the gas, right? I mean, that's a,
yeah.
The
well,
gas
they can't
really
buy
their,
the gas,
their immediate
though.
Issue. Yeah,
Russia won't sell it to them, and there's
well,
some.
That's probably true.
There's no, they won't. They, I mean, they've shut off the pipeline. I mean, Germany was buying Russian gas. What Russia was only give them a little bit, though. But there's
right.
another school of thought that says Russia's going to cut off the oil no matter what, even if they stop say we're not going to buy it. And you know, they all met last week. The bad guys met in Russia. China is going to be Russia's biggest customer of selling that, buying that oil and natural gas, I'm sure, and other rogue regimes probably. So that's a big thing to keep in mind, December 2nd. Okay, now on the inverse side, the one that is really popping today, there's two that stand out. Inverse real estate. Okay, that just makes sense because where's the biggest fallout from rising interest rates? Real estate. DRV is inverse the real estate sector. And, you know, I mean, new home buy. You got the 30 years above 6 right now. That it was 3 not that long ago. Then the other one that stands out is one I've already mentioned, TMV. TMV is 3 times inverse the long bond, U.S. Treasury. I mean, that's the sweet spot right now, Barry. It's up 5.3% today, 5.3%. And since the beginning of the year, let's just do that. It began the year at a price of about 58, and now it's 124. So, yeah, it's more than doubled. Doubled, an ETF, a lazy, big, slow-moving ETF that did horribly during the 40-year run. It wasn't around for 40 years, but a bet against interest rates for the last 40 years was not a good bet. But over the last year and a half, 2 years, boy, this thing got down to 43. It's tripled since COVID, tripled. In price, TMV. I hear the music. That means we're out of time. We got a lot of work to do today as we await tomorrow's Fed decision. If you'd like to get in touch with us, emergency meeting, 855-611-BEST, or get the newsletter at GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.